Welcome to the Cancer Care Connect program. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we'll conduct a question-and-answer session, and instructions will follow at that time. If anyone should require assistance during the program, please press star then zero on your touch-tone telephone. As a reminder, this program is being recorded. At this time, I would like to introduce your moderator for today's program, Dr. Carolyn Messner, Director of Education and Training at Cancer Care. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Trinitha, and I too would like to welcome everyone to today's Cancer Care Connect program medical update on triple negative breast cancer. This is a very important program that we are offering today, and we are delighted with your response to the program. We have the program today is a collaborative effort between Cancer Care and 23 other organizations, and it's because of that collaboration that we have been able to reach so many of you on the call today. We have on this program today, we have 1,100 participants on the call. That's really a remarkable credit to each of you for joining the call today. And we have, and most of you are from the United States, but we do have international participants from Canada, the United Kingdom, Syria, and Argentina. And for those of you from the United States, you come from all different communities. You come from large and small cities, from suburban areas, as well as rural and frontier communities. So you really come from all over the world, clearly a group of information seekers. I'd like to turn your attention for a moment to the materials that you received from Cancer Care. In those materials, there's an outline that our speakers have prepared, and there's information about all the different organizations that have come together to make today's program possible. There also is an evaluation form, and I would ask you to take a moment at the end of today's program and complete that evaluation form. You know, who but each of you can best tell us what programs, what topics you would like us to offer. Indeed, today's program came out of a program that we did in December, a recommendation from those of you who were on the call who wrote that you wanted us to do this program. And so here we have it. So please tell us the topics you'd like us to offer, and we will very much try to provide those programs for you. Now, today's program has been made possible by an educational grant from the Angela Andrews Ryan Fund, Memorial Medical Center Foundation in Long Beach, California. And I particularly would like to thank the Angela Andrews Ryan Fund for supporting today's program as a legacy to Angela Andrews Ryan and her family, who really wanted to help others to learn more about triple negative breast cancer. And I particularly would like to thank Lynn Flanagan, who is a family member, for her enormous support of this program and in helping also to reach out to so many of you to make this program possible. So thank you, and this is very special. Now, we have a number of speakers on our program today. I want to start. We have just wonderful faculty today. Our first speaker is Dr. Judy Garber. And Dr. Garber is Director, Cancer Risk and Prevention Program, Dana-Farber Cancer Institute, Associate Professor of Medicine, Harvard Medical School. As you can see, she wears many hats, and she is going to cover an overview of triple negative breast cancer, and she's going to discuss treatment options. Dr. Garber.
Good afternoon, at least in Boston. It's a pleasure to be with you today. I'm going to talk about triple negative breast cancer. I'm going to leave some of the treatment options for Dr. Rugo to discuss right after me. So the question came up, what is triple negative breast cancer? And it is odd to define something by what it is not. But the triple negative refers to negative for estrogen receptor, progesterone receptor, and HER2. For those of you who've been involved in breast cancer for a while, you know that whenever a breast cancer is diagnosed, it is characterized by the pathologist to see whether it expresses genetic products or proteins, estrogen receptor and progesterone receptor, to see whether it will be amenable to modifications in hormones or hormonal treatment. And HER2, now that we know that tumors that express HER2 require a specific treatment that targets the HER2 molecule. But the tumors that have none of the above seem like orphans. They are a subset of breast cancers. They are not sensitive to hormone manipulation and not sensitive to Herceptin. They need to be treated in other ways. So they are triple negative by virtue of being negative for ER, PR, and HER2. But they are more than what they are not. They clearly are a specific subset of cancers. They look similar under the microscope. They tend to look somewhat aggressive. Most triple negative tumors are high grade. Grade often describes how much like normal breast cells a tumor might look. So low-grade tumors look like normal cells, and as they get progressively abnormal and have specific features, they change their grade. So grade 1 tumors are low-grade and more normal-looking, Grade 3 tumors look more abnormal or more aggressive, but appearances can be deceiving, and despite the fact that these tumors are usually high grade, one cannot conclude just from that that they are always more aggressive. And these tumors have been studied at the molecular level as well, and they express or don't express various genes as part of their biology about what drives them and defines how they behave that are specific or at least characteristic of the basal-like tumors. So in some pathology reports, the pathologists have begun to look at other genes and ask, do these tumors show P53 changes? For example, P53 is a gene that's very frequently abnormal in breast cancers, and it is frequently abnormal in these triple-negative breast cancers. Many pathology departments don't report on P53 because we don't have specific treatments that depend on whether these tumors are or are not P53 positive. So for a pathologist to look at these tumors, they would see a tumor they would describe as abnormal looking and negative for ER/PR and HER2 as we described. Now, people have only begun relatively recently to recognize that not only do breast cancers look different, but their behavior in the population can be different. Who gets them? What are the risk factors for them? We're not that smart, but we're getting better, and we do know that most breast cancers that occur in the U.S. population are actually estrogen receptor positive or estrogen sensitive. That's particularly true in tumors among older women. And we've begun to try to separate in epidemiologic studies to ask whether there are risk factors for these hormonally driven or hormone-related breast cancers that are different from tumors that don't express the estrogen and progesterone receptor. And you can see some differences, things you might expect. Most of the reproductive risk factors that we know about, like age at first birth, or even number of births, or use of hormones like hormone replacement therapy, those are more associated with tumors that tend to be hormonally driven or hormone related, and less so for tumors like these triple negative tumors. In fact, the only risk factors that have really been shown to have much relation so far to things like triple negative tumors are family history, and we'll talk a little bit more about why some of that may be so, and number of births, which is a funny factor since most of the time that's been related to estrogen receptor positive tumors. And I would say that it's not at all the kind of strong link that would make anyone rethink the number of children they would have. It's just not the case, but it is an interesting possible biological clue to ask a question about whether number of births affects the type of breast cancer one might get. And I think the most compelling risk factor that's been identified really has been ethnic background. Triple negative tumors are more common among African American women and among African women in Africa as well. And it's not at all clear why this is true at the present time. It's not known whether this is related to specific genetic factors that might be distributed differently among subgroups in the population, or whether this is some difference in other exposures or in lifestyle, in diet. I don't think we know really at all why this is the case, but this observation has been repeated in many studies. If you look at particularly premenopausal African-American women with breast cancer, a much higher proportion of their breast cancers will be triple negative than the proportion of triple negatives among women who are Caucasian or Latina. And that is one of the main mysteries of the time, and that's seen repeatedly. There are some data that say that that's still true even as women get older after menopause, that a greater proportion of tumors will be these triple negative or estrogen receptor negative tumors, and some of that is because perhaps of lower hormone use among women of African American descent in this country. Now, the main question is often about treatment strategies and what do we know from the biology. So the important news, I think, and that you might not realize when you look at some of the online information, is that triple negative tumors do respond to chemotherapy. So we don't have hormonal treatment for them and we don't have Herceptin, but we do have chemotherapy. And these tumors are sensitive. In fact, they're more sensitive in most studies than the other types of tumors. That's a good thing since that's what there is. And it's also true that women whose tumors respond to chemotherapy do well even if they were triple negative to begin with. Tumors that don't respond present more problems. We need more drugs for those, and that's what Dr. Rugo will discuss. And they are sensitive to the anthracyclines like adriamycin or doxorubicin, and they are sensitive to the taxanes like Taxol or Taxotere, both important things that we have available at this time. So the message about chemotherapy is not that we don't have it and not that it doesn't work, but that for other tumors we have something in addition. And here we're looking in research for other things we can offer as well as chemotherapy for these women to make these tumors more often and more completely disappear with treatment. One of the other features of triple-negative tumors that we've become aware of is that these are the tumors that occur most often in women who have a familial risk of breast cancer related to a BRCA1 gene, not BRCA2, which is a little interesting because the genes are so related to each other, but women who have a BRCA1 mutation are more likely to have triple-negative breast cancer. And the converse is also true. A woman who has a triple-negative tumor, even if she doesn't have much family history, and even if she's a little bit older, is more likely to have a BRCA1 mutation than someone who has a different type of breast cancer. And from the fact that we know that the role of BRCA1 in the cell is to repair different kinds of genetic damage that occurs to the cell's DNA, we can think that maybe that's telling us we should try to treat breast cancers that occur that are triple negative, even in women without a BRCA1 mutation, with drugs that attack repair of genetic errors or DNA repair. And that has led to some of the recent thinking that in addition to the drugs we already have, maybe we should be thinking about others, drugs like platinums, for example, that target DNA repair, that are used in the treatment of ovarian cancer and other tumors, but have not been used so much in breast cancer until more recently. And now that we are thinking that way, platinum can become something we can study, as well as some of the other more targeted therapies that Dr. Rugo may want to discuss.
Well, I want to thank you very much, Dr. Garber, for excellent presentation, really for helping to define and everyone to understand triple negative breast cancer. And our next speaker is Dr. Hope Rugo. Dr. Rugo is Clinical Professor of Medicine, Director of Breast Oncology Clinical Trials Program, UCSF Comprehensive Cancer Center. Dr. Rugo also wears many hats, and she's going to cover the concepts of clinical trials, treatments, and follow-up care. Dr. Rugo?
Thank you, and thanks for inviting us all and hosting this really important teleconference and such a fabulous resource. Just to build a little bit on what Dr. Garber was talking about, the purpose of clinical trials is to try and capitalize on what Dr. Garber just went through in detail in terms of our growing understanding of the biology of subtypes of cancers. So the way we did clinical trials for time immemorial, since we started doing clinical trials for cancer, was to say you have a disease, you have a certain stage or a certain amount of the disease, and then we're going to do a trial to test a new treatment and compare it to whatever the standard before was. Well, we've come to understand actually relatively recently that that's probably not the right approach, or I guess I could say that more strongly, it's clearly not the right approach in terms of where we are today and our understanding of breast cancer. So we've been able to understand that there are subtypes of breast cancer, and I think we're actually just beginning to understand those subtypes, and that they respond differently to different types of therapy. And, of course, as Dr. Garber went through, we've used sort of the markers, estrogen receptors, HER2-NU, to decide. But there are many other important markers that require much more fancy and molecularly based tests. So our goals moving forward is to try and focus on subtypes like this. And we know that the triple-negative breast cancers that we're talking about today are also somewhat heterogeneous, so that it's probably not one group of breast cancers, but actually a group where there are different genes that come into play and group these cancers differently. So as we understand them more in the future, we may be able to even divide up this group of breast cancers better as well. But for the moment, what we're doing is focusing on our clinical trials on these subtypes, and there's a lot of interest, as you heard, on the so-called triple-negative breast cancers. And our clinical trials have focused on two different sort of main ideas. One is to understand as much as possible about the biology of the cancer and then take that understanding and use treatments that target that biology. And the second is to try and figure out what the best approach is with cytotoxic chemotherapy, like the platinum idea that Dr. Garber just discussed. So there may be a way actually to combine those two different approaches so that we understand that maybe the way a particular kind of chemotherapy works is better for this kind of cancer than for others, and that targeting specific biologic factors that drive this cancer's growth work better. So, of course, the way to understand that is, one, to keep in mind what you're looking at every time a new agent comes up, but also the trials that try and help us understand what the right treatments are first need to identify the right group of women who the treatment should be tested in. There has to be a rational design to testing the specific drugs and the way we test them. So usually what starts out is there are phase one studies in all tumor types of new agents. And then as we move forward into the phase two type testing, we are looking at how do we compare a new treatment against our standard. And that's probably one of the hardest things we do, and it's hard for patients too, is that you're comparing what the standard is against either a new treatment or the standard plus the new treatment to try and understand whether that new treatment really works better. And then, of course, phase three trials are when we randomize a larger group of women to a standard versus a new in order to get a drug approved. Now, the way this has been looked at in the triple-negative breast cancer has been in a number of different areas. So targeting biology includes using our understanding of the chemotherapy that we've had around forever, as well as new drugs, and then biologic therapy. So one area you just heard about was using the so-called platinum salts, or carboplatinum and cisplatinum. And these agents appear to be more effective in triple-negative breast cancer than in other subtypes, but they aren't the final answer by any means. There is a lot of very interesting work going on by Dr. Garber and her colleagues looking at these platinum-like drugs and trying to identify from looking at tumor or tissue samples which kind of cancers respond best. So Dana-Farber is really at the forefront of doing this kind of work. Then there are some chemotherapy drugs which we know work a little bit better in the triple-negative breast cancers as a whole, and now as we do clinical trials, we're all separating out the triple-negative breast cancers to try and understand the effect in that group as much as possible. But really, we believe that the future is in how we're going to use targeted biologic therapies best to treat triple-negative breast cancers. So as a broad approach to biology, because these cancers grow fast and can invade, that means they must be able to create their own blood supply. So one area that has been of interest is adding anti-angiogenic agents to standard therapy for breast cancer in triple-negative disease. So we know that from the trial in metastatic breast cancer that combined the antibody that blocks new blood vessel growth, Avastin or bevacizumab, with Taxol or paclitaxel, that the women who had triple-negative breast cancer appeared to benefit a lot from the addition of Avastin. So there's interest in trying to look at that in patients who are receiving chemotherapy before surgery for a larger breast cancer, so a neoadjuvant setting, where women will get standard chemotherapy with or without Avastin, and also with or without a platinum chemotherapy drug, carboplatinum. And the advantage of doing this kind of trial in the neoadjuvant setting is that tissue biopsies can be obtained so that we can really understand which cancers might benefit more from anti-angiogenic therapy. And then the second whole area of looking at biologic treatment is to look specifically at the pathways that appear to be activated in triple-negative disease. So one area that appears to be important in cancers that have the BRCA mutations is a DNA repair pathway. And so there actually is a pathway called PARP, P-A-R-P, and there's a lot of interest in looking at inhibitors to PARP, both in women who have BRCA mutations and advanced cancer, but also in women who have just triple-negative breast cancer without those mutations, because there probably is similar pathways involved in this, what's driving cancer growth. So PARP inhibitors are actually early on in their exploration of treating triple-negative breast cancers, but we, of course, are very excited about them because we want to see whether or not targeting this biologic pathway will help. And there is some interesting information from patients who have ovarian cancer who have and BRCA mutations who've been treated with this medication as well. A number of companies are making PARP inhibitors that are in early development. And then there are different pathways as well. We know Dr. Garber was mentioning P53 and other areas. There is a receptor called EGFR, the epidermal growth factor receptor, also known as HER1, that has been shown to be increased in some patients' tumors that are triple negative. And so we recently reported a trial that we did with multiple centers in the United States, and Dr. Lisa Carey from the University of North Carolina presented this data actually just yesterday at our ASCO meetings, looking at an antibody to EGFR with the chemotherapy drug carboplatin, showing that some patients responded to the treatment, but we're not really sure that cetuximab, the antibody to EGFR, was playing a big role here. It probably was mainly the carboplatin with interaction with the cetuximab. So we're not sure that that's going to be the best approach, but I think we need to look at the next study where we see whether or not the cetuximab is helping the carboplatin to work. That's a drug, cetuximab, that's approved for colon cancer and head and neck cancer. And then there is another pathway called SARC, or SRC, where there's a lot of interest in looking at drugs that block that pathway. One drug that's approved for a kind of leukemia called dasatinib is being tested in clinical trials in triple-negative breast cancer. And then there's a whole host of other agents. Because triple-negative breast cancer is difficult to treat and the number of agents we have is relatively more limited, everybody who's making a new drug wants to know whether or not it works in triple-negative disease. And so there is another pathway called the Notch pathway that's being assessed as well in very early clinical trials. And I could tell you about a lot of other ones, even new chemotherapy drugs, new platinum agents that are being tested. But I think the main message is that it's a very exciting time where we're looking at new ways to combine biologic agents and chemotherapy in the most effective way, that clinical trials are critical because we don't have the answer yet. And one of the most important parts of our clinical trials is having some tumor tissue so we know how to make these drugs work the best in the right tumor, in the right tumors. Now, the last little bit here is follow-up care. And I just want to mention in early-stage breast cancer, if you have an early-stage triple-negative breast cancer, it can be quite hard to complete your chemotherapy and feel as though you don't have other treatment that you're receiving and you're not sure how to follow whether or not your cancer will come back. There have been numbers of clinical trials that have shown that doing regular scans and tumor markers don't help us in terms of finding the cancer earlier when it's at a more curable stage. In fact, the most important follow-up is still screening for new breast cancers with mammograms or, as appropriate, MRI, and going in for your every six-month visit and reporting new symptoms if those symptoms arise. There's a lot of interest in trying to prevent recurrence by looking at high-risk situations, such as, for example, in Germany and at our institution where we do bone marrow aspirations to look for very tiny numbers of cancer cells that might increase the risk of recurrence and then try and target them with new treatments. There is interest in the bisphosphonate zoledronate based on data presented from the Austrian Breast Cancer and Colorectal Group at ASCO, our ASCO meetings just in the last few days, that suggests that potentially this agent has some effectiveness in preventing some kinds of recurrences. We just don't know whether or not it works in the triple-negative breast cancer group, but there's a lot of work going on in that area. In addition, in a national randomized trial that's looking at different drugs in this class called bisphosphonates to try and reduce the risk of recurrence. So I think those are better approaches to look at clinical trials like that rather than to be doing scans on a regular basis that expose you to radiation, risk, and anxiety without benefiting you. And I think with that, I'll pass the microphone back.
Well, I want to thank you very much, Dr. Rugo, for such a really comprehensive and really excellent presentation about all the different treatments and clinical trials that are available. And our next speaker is Dr. Angela DeMichele. Dr. Michelle is Assistant Professor of Medicine and Epidemiology, Co-Program Leader, Breast Cancer Program, University of Pennsylvania, Abramson Cancer Center. And Dr. DeMichele is going to really give you an example of the clinical trial at work, and I'm going to ask her to talk to you about that. Dr. DeMichele?
Thank you, Carolyn. I'd like to just thank you for this opportunity to tell you a little bit about a trial that we're working on that I think really exemplifies some of the issues that you've heard about already from Dr. Garber and Dr. Rugo. So we are doing a trial, a clinical trial, for women who have triple-negative breast cancer that is metastatic. That is, it is outside of the breast and lymph node area. And this is a trial for women who have not had other chemotherapy for their metastatic breast cancer. They may have had chemotherapy in the adjuvant setting, but this is the first time they'll be taking chemotherapy for metastatic breast cancer. And we felt that it was critically important, as the other speakers have told you, to focus a trial specifically on this population of patients, because when we do trials where we take patients without regard for whether they're triple negative tumors or not, we don't get enough of the patients who have triple negative tumors to say something very specific about whether that type of tumor will respond to the treatment. So unless we do a trial that is specifically for women with this kind of cancer, we just can't learn enough about whether this kind of breast cancer will respond to the treatments we're giving. And so I think that's a really key point from all of the speakers today, to tell you that we're really focusing in on this patient population, on these types of tumors that we haven't previously really had enough information about because we haven't done trials specifically for them. Now, this trial is focusing on one of the mechanisms that Dr. Rugo mentioned, which has to do with blood vessel supply. And as she told you, these tumors seem to grow very quickly. And in order to do that, a tumor needs to be able to very easily establish a blood supply and be able to travel and spread. And there are a whole class of drugs now that are really geared at the machinery of the tumor cell that enables it to build these blood vessels and travel to other places. And one of the drugs that we're studying, called bevacizumab, which is a long, complicated name, and you've probably heard it called by its other name, Avastin, is one of the drugs that Dr. Rugo mentioned that did seem to have particular effect in one of the early trials in triple-negative breast cancer. So we've chosen to take this drug and combine it with a newer form of an older type of chemotherapy, a drug called Abraxane, which is actually a relative of other taxanes like Taxol and Taxotere. But it's different in that it's targeted to the tumor by a small protein that some tumors make that's called SPARC. And this SPARC protein, if the tumor makes it, can bind the drug and really just pull it in, drag it into the tumor. And so we believe that these two drugs, Avastin and Abraxane, will work really well as partners, because the Avastin actually has the effect of shutting down new blood vessels, but actually opening up the established blood vessels so that drugs can get in more easily. And if the tumor has the SPARC protein and the Avastin has done its job to open up that blood vessel, the Abraxane will be able to get into the tumor more readily and hopefully be more effective than it typically would be. Now, we are having these patients obtain the tumors from their original diagnosis so that we can look to see if the tumors have the SPARC protein. Obviously, when a woman comes to us to be part of the trial, we have to make sure that the tumor is negative for estrogen and progesterone receptors, as well as HER2. And most of the time, that's been done even at the time of diagnosis. And we'll be holding on to these tumors and be studying them with some of the molecular methods that have previously been described to you, so that we can try to understand in these tumors what genes are on, what genes are off, and whether those can predict who will respond to the treatment. The other novel thing about this trial is that while patients are on the trial, they're having several specific scans done with both a special kind of MRI and a special kind of PET scan that will help us know what's happening to the tumor while they're on the treatment. So it can help us see if the blood vessels are, in fact, remodeling. It can help us see if the tumor is shrinking. All of this that is really specific to tell us if the drugs are having the kind of effect that we hope that they'll be having. So I think that this is just one example of many, many trials that are going on right now that are really trying to take novel drugs and novel approaches and understand the underlying biology of the triple negative breast cancer to really be able to do better with treatment now than we've ever been able to do in the past. And we're drawing on other types of trials to help us design new trials in this population, and one that both Dr. Rugo and I are working on is called the I-SPY trial. And this is a trial for women who have stage 3 breast cancer, so they're presenting with a breast cancer that requires that they have some chemotherapy before they have surgery. So this is not metastatic breast cancer like I was talking about just a moment ago. This is an earlier stage. And these women are undergoing biopsies of the tumor both before and after they get the chemotherapy, as well as donating some of their tumor at the time of the surgery so that we can learn which tumors respond to chemotherapy and which don't. And when looking at the triple negative tumors, this is one of the trials that's shown us that these tumors really do have a high rate of response to chemotherapy. And the majority of these actually almost completely disappear at the time the patient goes to surgery. But some of them don't. And by having the tumor samples, we can compare the features of those that respond to those that don't and be able to really understand the pathways that are getting in the way of the response and that might be good targets for future therapy. So I think that this is really a new era in the time of the trials that we're doing in breast cancer. And the triple negative area is one that's getting a lot of attention. It can sometimes be a little scary when you go and talk to the doctor about how should I be treated for this? Should I go on a clinical trial? And I think it's important to ask questions and feel very comfortable. Many of the trials we've talked about are not using drugs that have never been used in people before, but are really just trying to use drugs we already know a lot about and harness them in a new way. And by working together with your doctor, maybe donating some tumor tissue or undergoing certain kinds of scans, we can help really move this field forward so that we know the absolute best way to treat these tumors. So I think I'll stop there and allow the next speaker to come on.
I want to thank you very much, Dr. DeMichel, for really, really an informative presentation, also for helping the audience to understand the science and the rigor of clinical trials and all the attention that goes into the detail of the planning and the implementation of clinical trials. Thank you. Our next speaker is Dr. John Link. Dr. Link is founder and president of BreastLink Medical Group, medical director of BreastLink Medical Group, director of Long Beach Memorial Breast Center. And Dr. Link also wears many hats, as you can see, as do all of our speakers. And he is going to address the issues of communicating with your healthcare team, also about managing treatment side effects and quality of life concerns. Dr. Link?
Thank you. Thank you, Carolyn. I guess I represent somewhat the community oncologist, and I really think this type of a program is really important for our patients because I find in my practice that women with breast cancer, newly diagnosed breast cancer, metastatic breast cancer, are really hungry for information. And I think, as Dr. Garber said, that some of our women feel like orphans with this, quote, triple negative type of breast cancer because they see the women in the clinic that can go on and take hormone treatment or that are on Herceptin for a year. They feel that their type is somewhat neglected. And so I think as we make more rapid progress, and I think we will with triple negative now that it's been identified because we can now gear our clinical trials to this subset. The other thing is I think as many of you in the audience have found, if you kind of just go to the internet and start Googling triple negative, it can be pretty scary out there. But there is some really good news, and as mentioned before by our previous speakers, and that this subtype breast cancer is very chemosensitive, and we have made a major, major impact with our clinical trials and our regimens treating this. So one of the things the first thing I want to say is that when one has the opportunity to participate in a clinical trial, I think it's important to do it. And the question is, you know, how to accomplish that in the community. And I think it's important to ask your medical oncologist, who is usually the captain of your team with this type of breast cancer, about ongoing clinical trials. I think there are a couple of opportunities during the history of one's disease. One is at first diagnosis. And most women tend to be younger. These cancers tend to be fast growing. And in our practice, about 70% of women with triple negative breast cancer present with a dominant lump. And there is the opportunity to participate in what we call neoadjuvant or preoperative trials, where chemotherapy is given first before surgery. And in our practice, we participate in a couple of these trials. And I think the preoperative trials are extremely important in the research mode, because it allows us to identify regimens very quickly that are active and compare the state-of-the-art regimen to what's new. And the one that we're using in our community right now is the NSABP B40, which allows us to test the standard regimen against the standard regimen with two new type of chemotherapies and bevacizumab or Avastin, which was mentioned. Because chemotherapy is the mainstay of therapy, there are a number of issues, and I think women with triple negative breast cancer really need to be supported by a whole team. They need their surgeon, they need their medical oncologist. Many of them are young with family histories, and as was mentioned, BRCA1 hereditary women have a tendency to have a higher incidence of triple negative. So a geneticist may be involved. Nutrition is extremely important during treatment and after. So I think it's really important for women to feel part of a team that's taking care of them, not only just administering drugs, but taking care of the side effects. And we have a tremendous, besides new agents we have to treat cancer, we have a number of new agents that help us manage the side effects, from nausea, vomiting, mouth care. So things are much better in that regard, but women have to have access to this. So I think I only have a couple of minutes. I think it's important in addressing your medical oncologist, your doctor, to be very upfront. Let he or she know that you are really interested. You want to know about clinical trials. You want to know the latest information. And I think, in my opinion, knowledge is power, and it makes things much easier for you.
I want to thank you very much, Dr. Link, just for a really excellent presentation and really the importance of communicating with your healthcare team and really getting appropriate management of your side effects and care. Thank you. Our next speaker is Pat Spicer. And Pat Spicer is Breast Cancer Program Coordinator for Cancer Care. She's an oncology social worker, and she's going to talk a bit about cancer care services.
Thank you, Carolyn. Dealing with cancer can be an overwhelming and a frightening experience, and especially for women who are dealing with such a special diagnosis. Many of our clients experience feelings of helplessness and hopelessness and don't know quite how to deal with these feelings. Sometimes it's hard to tell your doctor about your concerns because of time restrictions, or you need to discuss treatment concerns with their office. Emotional needs can vary widely depending upon your access to medical care, your support systems, and many other factors, including where you are in your life cycle. Cancer has an emotional impact on both the person diagnosed with cancer and as well as the family, and at Cancer Care, we strive to support each person wherever they are in their life cycle. Some people will experience feelings of sadness and feelings of helplessness when they try to deal with cancer, and Cancer Care would like to help. We offer individual counseling, We offer groups both face-to-face, online, and in telephone formats, and we also offer practical help in the form of limited financial grants as well. To contact us, please call 1-800-813-THE-LETTERS-HOPE or 4673, or online at www.cancercare.org. Cancer may change your life, but it doesn't mean that you have to stop living. Please call us. We want to help. Thank you, Carolyn.
Well, thank you very much, Pat, for really letting people know about the services that they can access for free from Cancer Care. And now we have time for questions. We have lots of time for questions. I'm going to ask Trinitha to bring all of our speakers on board, and also, Trinitha, if you would explain to the audience how to queue up for questions, and we'll start our questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press the 1 key on your touch-tone telephone. If your question has been answered or you wish to remove yourself from the queue, you may press the pound key. Our first question is from Ann. Go ahead, please.
Yes, I would like to know, there are a lot of triple-negative women being diagnosed after the age of 50. And is the same information applied to them as it does to the majority of the younger ones? Are there any studies coming up for people that are older?
And thank you very much for that excellent question. Dr. Rugel, could you address that?
Yes, that's a good question. I think that, you know, it's a little, you know, we're always talking about where we see cancer more frequently, and I understand that that might be a little misleading. In this situation, all of our studies are pretty much open for everybody who qualifies, so it's not age-related. I think the point with triple-negative disease is it is more frequent in younger women and in certain ethnicities and people who have mutations, but of course we see triple-negative breast cancer at any age. It's just that hormone receptor-positive breast cancer becomes the dominant type in older women. So our trials are open for women who are older, and that's not really a consideration. It's not that you would have a trial only open for a 35-year-old and not for a 55-year-old.
Excellent question, Ann. Thank you very much. Our next question, please.
Thank you. Our next question is from Elizabeth. Go ahead, please.
Hello. Can
Hello.
You hear me?
Yes.
Oh, great. Hi. I just finished going through chemotherapy for early-stage triple-negative breast cancer, and as one of the speakers mentioned, it's a difficult time knowing that there really aren't the hormonal treatments and things that you can keep taking. And I'm wondering what specific recommendations you can give to women in my situation. I know the WINS diet, some people have said that might be particularly effective for triple-negative women, or maybe exercise is effective, or I'm reading a lot now about the recent Zometa trial that came out at ASCO, and I'm wondering if that's something that triple-negative women could think about asking their oncologist to give them.
Well, Dr. Rugel, would you like to address that?
Yeah, that's a really an excellent question, and it's one that, of course, I brought up in the follow-up care idea. I mean, I think that, you know, one thing, of course, is to talk to your doctor and be aware of what your risk is so that you can, you know, be as comfortable as possible with the follow-up. But in terms of different treatments that might be available to reduce risk, one is, you know, other than your stage of diagnosis, very hard for us to assess risk other than doing, you know, clinical trials where we look, for example, at bone marrow cells or something like that. But, and so many of the trials have just, you know, included all women. And so there is a trial going on within the Southwest Oncology Group that's nationally available that randomizes women to one of three different drugs within a class called bisphosphonates. And that Zometa trial, that drug is a bisphosphonate, a potent intravenous bisphosphonate. The trial that was done in Austria, is the results are still early, and they didn't separate it out to know whether it was better in triple-negative patients or not. So I think that it's really a discussion with your oncologist. Those women only received, actually they did separate it out for triple-negative. I'm sorry, I'm thinking of two things at the same time. But the group of patients who were in that particular study were women who were most likely to get bone metastases or soft tissue disease because they all had to have hormone receptor positive disease. And in the trial, they found that a minuscule percentage of patients didn't. So hormone receptor positive disease, all getting ovarian suppression and hormone therapy, And then they got 7 doses of this Zomida for every 6 months for 3 years with 3 years of hormone therapy and no chemo. So you think about it, that's like light years away from where you are with triple negative breast cancer. Now, one study that has shown some benefit, again, it's still early, is a trial called the WINS study, and I think that's what you were referring to, where women adhered to a strict low-fat diet and also had some weight loss associated with it. And they saw a tremendous decrease in recurrence in the triple negative population, interestingly, more than in the ER positive population. And so there's actually a confirmatory trial going on called the LISA trial in Canada and the United States, where there's exercise and diet incorporated. So I think for my patients, I'm always saying, well, you know, exercise and a low-fat diet, I think, is one thing you can do for yourself that might reduce your risk of recurrence. But at the moment, I think going, if you were interested in the bisphosphonate idea, it would be best to approach it in with one of the clinical trials, the big national clinical trial that's using bisphosphonates, because that data from Austria was all in hormone receptor-positive disease.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Our next question.
Thank you. Our next question is from Christine. Go ahead, please.
Yes. Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, Christine. You
mentioned sort of newly diagnosed versus metastatic responses, and I'm curious whether there are any recommended protocols or clinical trials for local recurrence of triple-negative breast cancer, and if there are particular doctors or organizations who are specializing in this.
Dr. Garber, could you address that?
You know, I'm not aware of any particular focus on local recurrence for women with triple negative breast cancer. I think many of the trials that would look at any kind of recurrence, distant or local, would be appropriate in that circumstance. But maybe Dr. Rugo or Dr. Link would know if there's a trial I'm overlooking.
Dr. Rugo, could you?
There is interest in so-called inflammatory breast cancer, so there are a number of trials that are available for inflammatory disease that often includes local regional recurrence. The interest in local regional recurrence in terms of trials, although these are sort of concepts rather than trials, is the idea of using anti-angiogenic therapy potentially as a radiation potentiator. But, of course, the situation is complicated because sometimes local recurrence occurs in the setting of someone already having had radiation. Another area of interest has been hyperthermia or heating the tumor bed and then delivering chemotherapy that might be able to go to an area that had higher blood flow. But other than that, I think that's really where the extent of, I think, where trials are going right now. I don't know, Dr. Link might have some other ideas, too. I know there's been some interest in Southern California.
Yeah, I'm not aware of any regional trials at our cancer centers down here specifically looking at local recurrence as such. I think, you know, as far as management, If it is a local recurrence in the breast where there has been breast conservation, obviously more surgery. And then the question is, does one retreat with a second course of adjuvant therapy, of chemotherapy? And what we are doing when this rarely happens, at least in the last couple of years, we've been using a platinum-based regimen because most of the women have had standard anthracycline taxane regimens. As Hope, you mentioned, this might be a really good opportunity to look at angiogenesis agents because the disease is right there. It's very similar to a neoadjuvant kind of situation.
Thank you. Excellent question. Excellent answers. Our next question, please.
Thank you. Our next question is from Virginia. Go ahead, please.
Hello, I'm a newly diagnosed triple-negative breast cancer patient, and I'm in the position of trying to make a decision about surgery, which is what my oncologist recommended, or doing neoadjuvant treatment. And I'm a little confused as I listened to Dr. Rugo because it sounded like she was suggesting doing neoadjuvant treatment as a superior choice. And so I'd like some kind of clarification on that. I have a relatively small localized tumor.
Thank you. That's an excellent question, Virginia. Dr. Rugo, then, would you kind of address that?
Yes, I'd like to address it and then have Dr. DeMichel make a comment, too. because of the, this area of focus in neoadjuvant therapy. But I didn't mean that it was better. I just meant that this was a really exciting area in clinical trials, and I don't think I clarified that very well, so I appreciate you bringing that up. The area in clinical trials, the reason why it's so exciting is that for tumors for which it's appropriate, we can get tumor tissue without subjecting people to big biopsies of liver or lung, You can, because you take the tumor off eventually, right? So you get tissue at the beginning and during treatment at the end. Also, we can see the tumor shrink. So this is one way where we could take a novel therapy and get an idea if it's going to work or not right away. However, that doesn't mean that that's the right treatment for you to get. What it is that if tumors are relatively larger and if you need a mastectomy and you want to try and shrink it beforehand to have breast-conserving surgery, or there's a clinical trial that's appropriate, then neoadjuvant therapy, I think, is a good way to go since you will receive chemotherapy either now or later. But in the standard setting, most women who have small tumors will still go ahead with their lumpectomy and sentinel lymph node biopsy, and what we know is neoadjuvant and adjuvant therapy is equivalent in terms of outcome. Dr. DeMichel, do you have another comment?
Yeah, I think I just want to reinforce what you said, which is that when we've talked about neoadjuvant therapy on this call, we've been really referring to this as a way to develop better treatments for triple-negative breast cancer. And the trials have shown that whether you take the chemotherapy first and then have surgery, or have the surgery first and then do chemotherapy, that at this point, if the treatments are the same, if the chemo is the same, that one is not necessarily better than the other in terms of long-term survival. However, it is beneficial, as Dr. Rugo said, in patients for whom the surgery might be technically difficult. So if the tumor were large, we will look to doing the chemotherapy first as a way to improve the type of surgery or even maybe be able to move from a mastectomy to a lumpectomy. In your situation where you've described a small tumor, and I think in general in a case where someone has a small tumor, you really do have the advantage of making a choice about whether you'd want to take the chemo first or have the surgery first. One has not been shown to be better than the other in the triple negative group of patients, but it is in that scenario where you're doing the chemotherapy first that there are trials going on where you might have the opportunity to also take a newer or novel therapy. So I know it can be very difficult to make decisions about what's best, particularly when we tell you that there are lots of reasonable options. But I think in this case, it really is okay to go with what feels better to you in terms of the order of things. And I would also say that we don't really have any information yet on whether there's any reason to be concerned about using radiation after lumpectomy in women with triple-negative tumors. But if we think about other types of tumors like the triple-negative tumors that have these DNA repair abnormalities like the BRCA1 positive tumors, there doesn't seem to be any additional risk to using radiation after lumpectomy. So I think all of the options are reasonable ones for someone with a small triple-negative tumor.
Carolyn, this is John Lane. Can I just make one comment? I think there is, again, I agree that there's no, as far as survival outcome with surgery first or chemotherapy first, to date there hasn't been a difference. But I think there is some prognostic value in doing chemotherapy first in that if one sees a very good response to the chemotherapy, and very often in perhaps 50% of cases of the triple negative women getting preoperative chemotherapy, the cancer will completely go away under the microscope. We know when that happens that the woman's prognosis is excellent, and the overall cure rate's probably in excess of 90% when that happens. If you do surgery first and you give chemotherapy after, and most young women with triple negative breast cancer, regardless of size, will get chemotherapy after, you don't have that marker, so to speak. And that may be important in the future in planning trials for women that don't have good responses to preoperative chemotherapy, perhaps adding platinum or an angiogenesis agent afterwards.
Yes, and I would agree that that's a really important point, and also very important for our clinical trials and for example, really our ability to target biology. But I would say for this particular patient who called in with the question that because we don't know what to do, and the first, you know, the treatment is not as effective as we'd like it to be, that at the moment the outcome is identical whether you get your treatment first or second. And for small tumors, many surgeons would prefer to do the surgery up front, understand your nodes. So I don't think you can go wrong with any approach, and what the approach you planned is fine.
Yep.
Actually, most encourage you to do, of course, is to take the information that you learned today back to your treating healthcare team. Have, of course, a discussion with your physician. Some of you may choose to seek a second opinion, but really have a discussion in terms of what really fits best for you in terms of your own medical situation, in terms of what you need to have done in terms of your lifestyle. So it's very important that you speak with your treating physician. This program is intended to give you general information. We hope you then can use that with your treating team and become a bit more knowledgeable and informed. So these are wonderful questions. What a great audience. Our next question, please.
Thank you. Our next question is from Anna. Go ahead, please.
Hello?
Yes, your question.
Oh,
thank you.
Okay, I'm sorry. My question is about follow-up. Do I understand correctly from Dr. Rugo that regular scans have not really helped much in terms of finding tumors early, but I did not get what he said would help better?
Dr. Rugo?
It is true that doing regular scans isn't helpful because finding metastatic disease doesn't help you. I mean, you do just as well whether you find it from symptoms or whether you find it from routine scans, and the scans have a lot of downsides. What you should be doing, of course, is exercise, maintaining good health, eating a low-fat diet, and then we do follow our patients on a regular basis every 6 months, because the most important impact we can make is, besides lifestyle recommendations, is by screening for new cancers. And so we do a clinical breast exam every 6 months, which is the recommendations nationally, and then imaging for whatever the recommendations for imaging for you are for your breast. So, for example, mammogram, if that's what's indicated on a yearly basis, or if you've had a mastectomy, or whether you need one every 6 months, and whether or not you're a candidate for MRI screening.
Next question, please.
Thank you. Our next question is from Nancy. Go ahead, please.
Hi. First of all, thank you so much. This has been a fascinating call. My first question, I guess, is for Dr. Garber. You mentioned that the number of births might be a factor. My question is, more births or fewer births tends to have an impact? And then follow-up to that is there any kind of evidence, even anecdotal, that women undergoing fertility treatments tend to get triple negative?
Dr. Garber, could you address those questions? Or?
I can try. There is a study that showed that women who had more births had a slightly higher risk of triple negative breast cancer, but I don't think the data are remotely strong enough to affect anyone's family planning going forward. And for the other question, which was about fertility treatments, right now, as far as I can tell, there are really no data to suggest that fertility treatments are associated with increased breast cancer risk. However, remember that fertility treatments are relatively late to the scene, and that much of the challenge is finding a way to look not only at the treatment, but also at the reason for the infertility, because both things might influence risk of breast cancer going forward. And that's affected even further by the fact that triple-negative breast cancers, as we said, have a slightly different distribution in the population by age. All of that is just a lot of explanation for why we don't know. We don't know, but there have not been studies to say that women who've had fertility treatment have to be particularly worried about breast cancer or ovarian cancer, actually, at this time. I don't know if anyone else has anything to add.
No, I would second everything you've said.
I agree.
For a collective sigh of relief in our audience, and our next question, please.
Thank you. Our next question is from LaTanya. Go ahead, please.
Hi. One of my friends has triple-negative breast cancer, and she said her last visit with her medical oncologist that he said that if she reaches year 3, and her cancer has not come back, that she's safe. Is there any research or any data about that?
Dr. Rugo, would you address that question?
Well, there are, you know, it's actually kind of a funny way that this came about, which was that, you know, we have had a lot of new research on treating hormone receptor positive breast cancer with new hormone agents. And in trying to separate out what the right hormone treatment has been, we've been looking at what happens to women and what is the pattern of their recurrence. We've understood for a long time that hormone receptor positive breast cancer could recur late, as much as 12 or even 15 years after diagnosis, because it's a slow-growing cancer. So through this, we understood that if you have a hormone receptor positive breast cancer, about 50% of the recurrences occur in the first 5 years, but 50% occur after 5 years, and that's been one of the reasons why we've been looking at longer duration hormone treatment and different hormone treatments. For triple-negative disease, and probably for most HER2-new positive cancers, most of the recurrence risk occurs in the first 2 to 3 years, but not all. So it does appear that if you're 5 years out, and five is not a magic number, but we use it, you know, it's a nice round number. If you're 5 years out and you haven't had a recurrence from triple-negative breast cancer, your chances of recurring subsequently are extremely low, much lower than someone who has hormone receptor positive disease, where the outcome was better in the first 5 years. So I hope that made sense. But in fact, I don't know that there's any magic to 3 years. Generally, we've used 5 years as a cutoff, and I think the issue is that the risk is all seems to be more front-loaded. In other words, by the time you get out to 5 years, your risk of recurrence is exceedingly low if you have triple-negative breast cancer.
Kat, would you just comment? I know in the groups that you run, that women often talk about these issues quite a bit in terms of living with uncertainty. Could you just comment on that?
Yes, certainly. I think somebody early on used the term often in describing women with triple negative breast cancer, and that's certainly one of the things that has come up in the group, that even in the sense of in the group, they feel isolated and kind of different, and there is a kind of uncertainty, more so than with women who have an ER-positive or ER-negative tumor. They are more bewildered by what their treatment choices are, or in some instances, lack of treatment choices. And I think a program like this, where there's an open discussion of what's available in terms of clinical trials and response to treatment, is so important to make these women feel more inclusive. Because even in the breast cancer community, they feel different. And I think this was an outstanding program in terms of addressing those differences.
Thank you. We have our work cut out for us to continue providing programs like this. Our next question.
Thank you. Our next question is from Vicki B. Go ahead, please.
Yes. In July of 2006, my biopsy revealed that I had 5% receptors for estrogen, no receptors for progesterone, and no receptors for HER2. And my oncologist said that the general consensus was that 5% was considered essentially negative for treatment purposes. Is there any newer study or thoughts on that?
Dr. Rugo, would you address this?
You know, there's been a lot of work that's been done looking at hormone receptors and whose cancers respond. We know that if you have a very low level of positivity, that the response is not as good and that you don't get as much of the positive benefit of having hormone receptor positive disease. But it does appear that those cancers still can respond to hormone therapy. So the current standard would be if you have any receptor positivity that we do recommend adjuvant hormone therapy. Now, there's been a lot of interest in whether or not, for example, aromatase inhibitors might be better for young women, ovarian suppression, but we don't know the answer to that right now. But we hope to in the future, but we don't know the answer right now. And Dr. Garber, do you have another thought on that?
No, I agree. There's a lot of information, a lot of research going on trying to decide what's the best way to define estrogen receptor positive, how little is enough. But it's hard to imagine that in a treatment setting, you wouldn't want to err on the side of doing extra if you can in this setting. So hormonal treatment based on that 5% would almost always be recommended. And
Dr. Rugo, John Link, I wanted to ask, in this situation, would there be any benefit for sending the block for analysis genomically, looking at the estrogen receptor genes?
You took the words out of my mouth there because I was just thinking that.
I mean, you're going to obligate her maybe to five years of, an expensive therapy.
But, you know, what's interesting is, and I think that, you know, we may all have a little different take on this because it is really a new area without good validation. But, in other words, you don't really know if that's the right way to go or not. But what Dr. Link is suggesting is that you could send a little bit of your tumor tissue to Genomic Health, and they could look and see how much of the gene for the estrogen and progesterone receptor is expressed, in case it's actually higher even than what they found. I think that the only downside to that is that you had a degree of positivity, so if that's confirmed by immunohistochemistry, which is the testing they did, then you have some degree of positivity, and then we would recommend hormone therapy at least to see how it went.
And I think, John, too, the problem is, I mean, even in the data from Dr. Pike, who worked with the Oncotype work, that almost any positive has been positive. It's that the challenge has been on the very lowest side. But I agree, I would generally do just what you suggested and try to confirm it.
I'd also like to suggest that since there is such ambiguity about a treatment decision, that this may be a good point to think about having a second opinion at a major cancer center.
That's a very good point.
It's also
and it bring your tumor block so it can be retested,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I think it's also important to recognize that some breast tumors have what's called heterogeneity, that they have different areas that look different under the microscope or have different characteristics. And so if there is any uncertainty about one of the receptors that's been looked at in the tumor, that repeating that stain or sending a different type of test or even having another laboratory at a second opinion institution is a good idea just to help you feel more confident about moving forward.
I just want to ask Dr. Garber to just comment on the concept of a second opinion at a comprehensive center, if you could just say a word about that as we conclude.
Sure. I think you've heard it come up already many times that a second opinion can be a very helpful thing, sometimes as much because the pathology will be reviewed as for the medical opinion. Most communities have access to major cancer centers or at least to other hospitals or other groups that have expertise in breast cancer, and it's really the expertise that you're looking for. There are increasingly opportunities to get second opinions kind of long distance. I'm not sure how satisfying those always are. Sometimes, though, they're helpful for your doctor. And opportunities for second opinions come usually at decision points. So when you're deciding about adjuvant therapy just after a diagnosis, or if, unfortunately, the tumor has come back and you need to make a decision about treatment of recurrence, that's a time, or if it's time for other treatment options, to see are there clinical trials that might be appropriate for you. Is there some other way of thinking about available information that maybe would help you and your doctor to make other decisions?
I really want to thank all of our speakers today. You have been really an outstanding, really just an outstanding group of speakers. I want to thank you all and really for addressing this very important topic. I also particularly, again, want to thank the Angela Andrews Ryan Fund and Lynn Flanagan for actually really their enormous support of this program as a legacy and as a way of really bringing information to all of you about triple-negative breast cancer. Now, as we conclude the program today, I want to remind everyone that this is a one-hour education program. And in planning a program like this, we recognize that you all have many needs that go far beyond the scope of a one-hour program. And indeed, I also want to thank all of you who asked such great questions. And I know many of you still have questions, so I want to address all of you as well. Now, this is an hour program, but Cancer Care is out there all the time for you, and I want you to be very much aware of all the different services we offer so that when the program concludes that you have a connection for additional help. Now, Cancer Care is staffed by 40 master's-level oncology social workers who provide a host of services from supportive counseling. We offer practical and financial assistance, and we also have a copay foundation. We also offer support groups, both on the telephone and online. You heard Pat talk about the groups and how important they are. We also offer, of course, a host of educational programs like today's program. And we also have a lot of materials and educational materials that are very helpful to people as well. So all of these services are available. There's no cost for them, and you simply need to call us to get that information. You can call our 800 number. You can visit our website to access the service. Most importantly, as we conclude today, I would not want anyone to feel that you are alone in terms of with your questions or concerns. And again, as those of you who did not have a chance to ask a question, really just call us after the call, and we will very much try to help you with your questions and concerns. So you're now part of a community of support, not only from Cancer Care, but all the other organizations that worked very hard to make this program possible and to reach out to all of you as well. So I want to thank you all for your participation on the program today. Please do complete the evaluation forms. Please tell us what you'd like us to do. I know that we have our work cut out for us. We probably need more programs like this on this particular topic. Tell us what you would like, and we will very much try to help you with that. Again, thank you all for participating today, and I want to wish you all a very fine day. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your participation. That concludes the conference. You may disconnect and have a wonderful day.